Webster's Dictionary defines compliance as the action or fact of complying with a wish or command. This is the Compliance Guy.
The Compliance Guy.
As a healthcare provider or healthcare professional, navigating the muddy waters of compliance can get tricky.
And that's why we're here.
Helping you mitigate risk while increasing your profitability. This is the Compliance Guy. Now, here's your host, Sean Weiss.
All right. Hey, everybody. Happy Tuesday. Welcome to this episode of The Compliance Guy. It is a hashtag Terry Tuesday. So I'm joined by my very, very good friend, Terry Fletcher. We've been off the last couple of weeks due to scheduling and different things. And we're finally back together today. There's a song from the 70s. May have been the 80s.
Here we go.
Reunited, and it feels so good.
All right. Good morning, my friend.
Good morning. All right. So we are doing this a little bit earlier than what we would normally do it, because just want to be honest with folks, right now as this thing is airing, I am sitting on an airplane flying to the LAX airport and waiting for a plane change to head to Reno for a couple of days to spend time on site with a client. So we are actually recording this a little bit early. So I always like to be transparent. I don't know why I felt the need to share that with people, because it doesn't change the fact that this is still a killer episode.
It's still a good episode.
All right. So, I hope you had a great weekend. I am completely exhausted, to be 100% transparent. As many of you know, Jill and I and our family, we own a winery and a vineyard here in West Point, Georgia. And we had our big spring market, which was a two-day event. And as I explained to my wife, things that I was capable of doing in my 20s, 30s, and sometimes in my 40s, I am absolutely incapable of doing without significant consequences, meaning pain, in my 50s. And after 2 days of working, I don't know, 18, 19 hours a day of pure manual labor, last night when we returned back to our house, I got into the bed. I curled into the fetal position and I wept, because everything hurt and things still hurt today. So if you hear some whimpering in the background, that possibly could be me. But
okay, listeners, I need you to DM Sean. He's had a couple of medical episodes recently. I don't care, Sean, if you care that I say this, and you're recovered and you are overdoing it again.
As we violate HIPAA. All right.
Consider me to be Jill 2.0. What the hell are you doing? You need to take it easy. You can't do that anymore. Yeah, I know you that.
I know. And here's
you're
the
not even supposed
thing.
To be flying.
It's so funny. So yes, I've suffered a couple of issues. I had a very specialized heart procedure done, and I want to give a shout out to St. Joseph's Hospital in Atlanta. They are the premier and the most incredible cardiac surgery facility I've ever seen. And they are the world leaders and the pioneers in the procedure that I had done. Dr. Wasim Jabber, who is the chief of the cardiac surgery at Emory University, actually did my first procedure. And they found two blockages in my heart, 85 and 95% distal and proximal in my LAD, which obviously, as everybody knows, that is the main artery in the heart. So I'm now the proud owner of 5 stents. But a couple of days after the procedure, I was feeling all right. And then halfway through the day, I started not feeling all right and started having some pretty bad chest pains. And was supposed to fly to Nashville that night. I was actually speaking at HCCA on Sunday at 10 in the morning, and wound up having to be taken back to Emory University Main Hospital at like 8 o'clock on Saturday night, and was put into the cardiac cardiovascular intensive care unit because I was having an NSTEMI, which basically is a heart attack. And they wound up rushing me in for an emergency procedure the very next morning. And good news is they figured out what it was. They were able to deal with it and put me on some lovely medication that creates lots of imbalance for me in my personality and how I feel.
Yes, but if you keep working like this, where you shouldn't be,
so they called not me.
Recovering.
Yeah,
I know. You're going to end up with the cabbage. So knock it off. All right.
I know. So they called me and they actually said, "Hey, this is Dr. Jabber's office. He would like for you to go to cardiac rehab." And I was like, "Cardiac rehab? Are you kidding me? I'm doing my own cardiac rehab. I'm carrying cases of wine and beer and doing all this other nonsense. I am fine. I am not going to something with all these." Because when I went to cardiac rehab after the first time I had this problem, like 4 years ago, like the average age in there was like 90. And like, these are people that were walking around on, you know, canes and walkers. And I was like, yeah, this is not me. I'm 46 years old, 47 years old. So yeah, you know, I'm actually getting a break this week by getting to fly out to Reno and spend a couple of days there. I'll get to spend time with Scott Kraft on site with our clients. So I'm looking forward to that. But today we have a topic that is extremely important. And we're not talking about incident two, but we're talking about what it means to provide proper supervision for your healthcare workers and what it means when you tell a patient to return to the office for follow-up care. So let me pause there. And Terry, I'm going to let you kind of kick this thing off.
So we've had a couple of different scenarios, and I know you have a couple as well. One was, I had a recent client, a new client actually, that said, we're going to have our Medicare patients come in. We're kind of in a rural area, but we're not a rural health clinic. And we're going to just have our medical assistants there. And because they don't have good internet at home, so they can get telehealth services. And then through the iPad, where the doctor is going to be in another part, there's in Texas, another part of in the state of Texas, but we're in a rural part of state of Texas. I'm like, wait a minute, wait. She's like, oh, we're not going to bill an originating site. They're going to bill with the place of service O2. I'm like, again, wait. Who's in the office with the patients? You get medical assistants. I'm like, no. You have to be careful with this because there is, and I mentioned this offline to Sean, there's an illegal assumption. And just always think about, if you're in front of a judge, how would you respond when they ask you a question? There's a legal assumption that when a patient comes into your practice and they're being, whether it's connected to the internet, whether it's being hooked up, whatever, for a visit, whether it be virtual or in person, that there is somebody who can not only bill directly to the payer, but is considered a qualified healthcare provider, MD, DO, or mid-level provider. A medical assistant, an RN, an LVN, clinical staff are not considered that, and that would not be appropriate under supervision or even under telehealth rules. And it concerned me because I also had a recent practice where, remember, when you deal with just medical assistants, whatever, the highest billable service, again, under a physician they can report, would be a nurse visit. But there's specific codes, let's say, for an anticoagulant check, Coumadin check. And they said, well, we didn't have space in our clinical office, so we basically put them, oh man, I can't even say it without laughing. We put them in our billing office, and our billers are there. And they're getting their pro time. And I'm like, wait, what? And they're like, I said, there's no physicians there. There's no mid-levels. It's not considered a clinical certain. And it's not even a location that's on your enrollment form. And they're like, no, but it's okay because it is an extension of our office because it's under the same name. I'm like, but it's your central billing office. It's not a clinical office. And then again, with the supervision, I'm also seeing, and I know that it gets into a little bit of incident too, but then in the hospital, when we get into teaching facilities and things like that, we have doctors that are still apparently not reading the rules and the law, and they're, you know, vacationing in Cabo or in the Bahamas. And they're like, but I'm on an iPad and I'm still, you know, supervising my resident. I'm like, no, you're, first of all, you're out of country. So let's just stop talking after that. But secondly, you're on vacation. You're not immediately available. There's still some rules under supervision, immediately available should there be a problem. That's why the supervision exists, because the trust factor on the person you're supervising, the professional you're supervising, isn't 100%. That's why you have to be there to make sure if anything goes wrong, that you can step in. And I think the liberties and the bad actors we're seeing with this virtual supervision, Sean, even sometimes the in-person supervision gone wrong, is just, it's astounding to me that people aren't understanding the rules before they dive right in. And I'll throw it back to you, because I know you've got some things too.
Yeah. You know, listen, I tell folks all the time, you've got to use common sense. And I know sometimes common sense is lacking in certain regards, because we're also just trying to get through a day that, you know, we don't think before we act sometimes. And I'm not trying to be derogatory. I'm not trying to be flippant in any way, but I mean, I've been doing this for 30 years, and even seasoned executives who have understanding and knowledge, at least foundational knowledge of, you know, what is right versus wrong. You know, they're just trying to get through the day. You know, we have staffing issues, you know, meaning lack of staff. You know, we have more patients than what, you know, we can, you know, handle, whatever it is. And we're just trying to figure out how to coordinate all this stuff. And sometimes we don't dot an I or we don't cross a T. And unfortunately, you can't do that. You've got to dot the I's and cross the T's, period. There's no excuse for being non-compliant.
But I'm also finding that people are, I guess, equating what we dealt with during the height of the public health emergency to the current staffing shortages. And that's not the same.
No, it's not the same, because a staffing shortage is not something that is under a public health emergency.
That's administrative.
It is. It's administrative because it's your administrative problem at your practice. It's not administrative from a CMS standpoint or from a federal government standpoint. It's either self-inflicted, or it's just, you know, we are in a situation because it is what it is right now. And this is the current landscape that we live in. And I don't understand it. I mean, I talk about this all the time. I mean, there is no place that you can go in the area where I live where they are not hiring. If you want a job, there are good jobs to be had. Jobs that used to pay $8 an hour, paying $15, $16, $18, and $20 an hour. And for whatever reason, some people just don't want to work. I don't get it. But that doesn't give us the right to be able to say, well, we can't find people to work, so we're just going to cut corners. Listen, if you tell somebody that they're coming back for a follow-up visit and they're going to see a provider is not a medical assistant.
No.
A provider is an MD, a DO, an MP, or a PA, or other qualified healthcare professional with a credential and a license.
You know, and by you calling them something, how many times, I don't know, I know, Sean, you've been to the, you know, doctor enough where, and I know I go to my well checks and my, you know, 6 month follow-up for whatever meds I'm taking. And I just know that sometimes I'll have somebody come in and they'll say, oh, this is my nurse. And then the doctor will leave. And, you know, me being who I am, I'm like, are you really a nurse? And she's like, no, I'm just a medical assistant. He just calls me his nurse. And I'm like, oh man,
that's deceitful. Okay.
It is.
That's deceitful. And I have a major problem with that, because I sometimes feel like providers want to make their staff appear to be more than what they are so that it calms any concerns or it thwarts any dissension that a patient may have towards speaking to them. So they say, this is my nurse. Because like for me, when somebody says to me, this is my nurse, I am thinking of somebody who is either an LPN or an RN who has a formal degree They have a license and they are a clinical professional. No offense against medical assistants or techs. You all do a wonderful job. You guys and gals do so much work. And sometimes you put yourselves at risk by going above and beyond what even the state licensures allow for you to be able to perform. But, you know, you have to recognize, and I say the same thing to coders, right? You know, we could take this back a notch and tie it to coders because we've had this conversation. Just because a coder has an exposure during their prep for taking the CPC exam to anatomy, you are not a clinician.
No, no. Well, and patients also have, you know, again, from you and I, we're going to talk about just from a patient perspective, because, you know, and I'm sure many of you have been patients, even well-checked patients. But think about this, you know, first of all, here's kind of my, you know, analogy here. How many times do we call, let's say we have a question on our credit card and we call the company and we first get the stupid, you know, voicemail thing where they now route you to this person, this person.
I was so glad you said voicemail instead of stupid person.
I know. I can complain about a recording. And so, you know, you get this and then you finally get a person that, you know, may or may not know what your needs are. Then you get routed to somebody else. Finally, you speak to who you want to. So now pretend you're a patient and you're now, you're talking to who you think is a nurse. You're sharing some of your protected health information with somebody you thought was a nurse, but actually is a medical assistant. Again, I'm not discounting medical assistants. You have your roles and we couldn't do without you. So we appreciate you, but you have to stay in your lane and understand you can't be deceptive in who you are and what you represent as far as from a clinical standpoint, because I know I don't like to keep repeating myself like that credit card call. I want to make sure that I'm only telling my story once and maybe twice if the doctor reads that history and then says, okay, it says here XYZ, expand on that. But I don't want to expand on it five times, especially starting with somebody who can't do anything about it, who has no medical decision-making options. And then we get into, where's the doctor, by the way? And sometimes say, oh, I'm just going to see you today. We're just going to do this. The doctor's not here. And I'm like, okay, so you're not the nurse. You're the medical assistant. Where is even the mid-level? I actually had another situation with the e-visits. So those digital visits when you, for established patients through the portal. So when I talked to my physician about it, I'm just like, you know, you can charge for those when I, you know, if I have a question on medicine or anything, it's a cumulative visit. So it's based on time in a 7-day period. He's like, oh, thanks. So I had my A1C, my labs done, everything, you know, looked good. And they always, he's been really good about getting back to me in 24 hours. Well, I had my labs done and all of a sudden I get an alert whenever the response comes in, and it came in at 3:48 in the morning. I don't think my doctor's up at that hour looking at my normal labs and sending me something through my portal. I have a feeling it's automatic or it's staff or it's somebody that shouldn't be doing that. And don't think we don't look at timestamps. We do, you know, and it's just, I think Sean and I just, not just talking about supervision, but the rules, you know, I went to leave my last appointment and they handed me paperwork that didn't have my name on it. And I didn't notice till I got home. And all of a sudden, Sean, I have this paperwork and it says, Mr. Arthur so-and-so, you need to do, I'm just like, what? I found out everything about this patient that I didn't need to know. And it was a major HIPAA violation. And then it made me wonder who got my information.
Yeah,
what
right.
What if it was somebody that knew me, that I didn't want to know that I was in, you know, in the physician's office? And it just, it bothers me that the lack of security, the lack of, well, you're the compliance guy, the lack of compliance, understanding right. How this works. And there, it seems like everything that we do, whether it be supervision, whether it be workflows, HIPAA, and it doesn't matter, just understanding the rules. It seems like there's always a compliance piece that seems to be missing, that isn't tightened up, that people just don't care. And it's starting to get a little frustrating because everyone again still remembers what the height of the pandemic is. And they think now in 2024, almost a year after the end of the public health emergency, which really was only extended for politics and, you know, whatever, we know that. Right. And I'm not talking out of turn there. Everyone knows that.
No, it's the truth. There's no two ways about it. And anybody who disregards that fact or disagrees with that fact hasn't been paying attention.
And paying attention, right. So it, for me, you can't keep, and I know Scott Kraft and I have had this conversation, you can't keep equating current situation to what happened in the past when we are not in the same situation as the past.
That is right.
And so I you know, your final thoughts on this, how do you, because I know you have to bang your head as a compliance guy, as somebody who, you know, your whole life is about compliance. I've been dealing with compliance from a formal standpoint only really the last probably 5 to 6 years. I'm more revenue cycle management, but it's really been integrated in my work. I actually just recently got a new credential for it and prior authorizations, because it fascinates me how many people, how many practices, even hospitals, aren't compliant. How do you tell practices to right the ship and pay attention to compliance and in everything they do, instead of jumping in and just saying, well, let's see what sticks and I'm sure we'll be fine?
Yeah. You know, unfortunately, most organizations don't learn their lesson until they go through an adverse event, right? They have an adverse situation that comes up where somebody reports them either to the composite medical board, or they report them to the Office of the Inspector General or to an insurance company, and it turns into, you know, this big production where now they have to hire attorneys, they have to hire consultants, they have to go through all these motions, they have to develop corrective action plans, they have to create these policies and procedures. And it's the same thing I say every time. Listen, you can either spend a little bit of money up front, or you can spend a whole lot of money on the back end. The choice is yours. You know, everybody always thinks that I enjoy when people come to me on the back end for defense. I don't, because the work that I actually and my team that we actually have to do to try to figure things out, to try to get back to a baseline to where we can get a level playing field, is so much harder, and it's so much more labor intensive, and the hours that go into it. You know, I always like to tell people about this particular case that we were brought into. It was an OIG case against a SNF, a large SNF, and they basically waited till the back end to bring my services in, when we actually told them, and the attorneys told them out of the gate, don't wait to bring these guys in, because the work that they can do could be streamlined out of the gate as opposed to doing it on the back end. And once the Office of Inspector General writes a report, even if they're dead wrong, OIG is not going to change their report. They don't do it. They don't care. Talk to Eric Rubenstein. Talk to Jason Eisenrein. Talk to Matt Kachansky, all of these former OIG special agents that I work with. So it
kind of reminds me of this.
Yeah.
How many of us in our 50s now, and again, you know, I'm not secretive about this because I'm annoyed with myself, you know, recently, diagnosed as a diabetic. I'm fine now, you know, my A1C is controlled, but I'm controlled on medication. You know, obviously, when you don't have healthy lifestyle choices throughout your life, it's going to come back to bite you in the butt later in life. This reminds me of the same thing with compliance. If you don't make good choices along the way and understand that you can't backtrack, at some point, you're going to end up with these chronic conditions. And in the compliance world, it means that you're going to have to engage Sean's services. You're going to have somebody whistleblow on you. You're going to have, you know, a problem with having money taken back. And you're also going to have a problem with staff. Once you allow things to happen, it's hard to go back and train them to do things right when they're so used to doing things incorrectly. And a lot of medical professionals started during the pandemic. And so that's all they know. They don't know, you know, whenever I say something like, well, before the pandemic or before the public health emergency, they're like, well, I only started in 2020. And I'm thinking, wow, you really don't know how telehealth works or how supervision works or, you know, what the reality of the situation is when we're not in this health emergency. And now that we're not, it seems like the bad actors are even worse than during. It's crazy to me. It so is. The last thing I'll say in this, and then I know you need to wrap it up, is it's so important to be proactive to make sure that you are, you know, making those healthy lifestyle choices in your practice, not just for yourself, so that, you know, you are, you know, setting a stage for what kind of practice you want to have, what kind of exposure you want to have. You know, what kind of business risk you don't want to have out there. And I think that we've named a couple of topics from supervision to staffing to just understanding the published guidance and do not dive in until you know it. You have a compliance plan or program and everyone's on board with it. Otherwise, you're just going to be throwing things at the wall and it will come back to get you at the end and really relate it to your own healthcare. Where are you at now? What potential problem do you have for not making good choices or you have now, you know, and this could also happen in your practice.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. This was a fantastic episode. As always, I want to thank my very good friend, Terry Fletcher, for taking time out of her very busy schedule to jump on here and accommodate my travel schedule so we could get this done and get it out on Tuesday as we normally do. So thank you for that. And then to each and every single one of you, thank you so much for tuning in, logging on, and hanging out with us just for a little while. I will be back next week with our all-star Monday coding compliance roundtable. And actually, I'm lying. I will be back Friday this week with Brian Meek of Brennan, Manna, and Diamond disseminating and talking through all of the changes with the non-compete and what's coming down the pike 120 days after it's published in the Federal Register. So until then, be good to yourself, but more importantly, y'all be good to each other. Take care.
You've been listening to The Compliance Guy. Sean has been doing this for 28 years. He holds 10 national board certifications. He's a partner and the vice president of compliance for Doctors Management, LLC. He's a subject matter expert in federal court. He's lectured at the most prestigious institutions. He's engaged with members of Congress in both chambers. So what we're saying is he's qualified? We hope you've enjoyed the show. Make sure to like, rate, and review. And we'll be back soon. But in the meantime, you can find us on social media @The Compliance Guy. See you next time on The Compliance Guy.